Okay, thank you. Let me first start with thanking organizers for inviting me and giving me the opportunity to stay a few weeks here at this workshop and to contribute to this program, although I am not so tightly bound to this, what is title called, it means Realistic Theories of Collected Electron Materials. But I think that we saw, or most of you, or a part of you who stayed longer, a broad spectrum of talks, starting from experimental talks through ab initio calculational methods and further to impurity solvers up to, that means advanced model calculations like randomization group. And this my talk will be in this, that means one of these part of model calculation which should be first explored before can be applied to real realistic calculation. But I think that is a good idea of this workshop is that simply that the organizers realize that to understand or to develop a reliable methods describing correlated electrons in real materials, you should really explore many possibilities going far beyond these realistic theories, that means going to model calculation. And in my talk, I would like to concentrate on something which is going to be generally called renormalization within perturbation theory, and in particular, it's renormalization of charge and renormalization of two particle quantities, and which situation I can use it and somehow get some profit from this, and how can I solve some kind of problems in this respect. So, to start, why actually one should deal with perturbations here? Because if we speak about strongly correlated system, we would expect something non-perturbative. And of course, the question would be whether perturbations could at all would be some use. What offers our perturbations here is mostly a systematic tool for developing analytically controlled approximation. That means analytically controlled means I really try to understand the phenomena and first principle from the microscopic point of view from quantum mechanics. Of course, I have a diagrammatic representation, which is appealing physical interpretation. I can really see this physical or interpret the processes as physical processes being this part of these diagrams. And what I would say is a modern approach to perturbation theory is not that I simply some diagrams in some classes of diagrams, but I try to combine perturbation methods, that means the development or the developing or the expansion of variables or of functions into diagrams and use this function into the put the function into the equation of motion with I'm principle exact and can calculate the rest of the quantities via this equation of motion. There is a combination of perturbative approach with non-perturbative self-consistent construction. And the model calculation, of course, in compared to the realistic calculation, that they differ in that simply the model calculation suppress all those short-range length scales. That means I replace mostly this tight binding model, that means the local scale is this muffin-thin sphere is in principle zero dimension. That means I do not care about the small scales, length scale, and I take care only of the long scale fluctuation, which is good for collective response and cooperative behavior, which can be seen in phase transition. And I think the most advantage of this model calculation is that I think I can explore more advanced methods which are not at present available for this realistic calculation. Maybe in future can be applied also for realistic calculation. So the layout of the talk is that I will generally speak about diagrammatic renormalization and perturbations, so how to formulate it generally. How can I define thermodynamic quantities within these renormalized theories? In particular, I will speak about the one particle mass renormalization, which is somehow collected into the Baym and Kadanoff approach in the conserving way. Then I will concentrate on two particle renormalization, either non-self-consistent and self-consistent. I will end up as a top or the main topic of this is the Parquet equation. It is a genuine charge renormalization in the perturbation theory. And at the end, I will show some examples of simplified Parquet equation in solution and the consequences of this solution. Okay, in principle, when we meet renormalization in principle is omnipresent. That means we see it everywhere, starting from the weak coupling theory. You know that even Fermi liquid theory demands some quasi-particle picture demand already mass renormalization, although everything is, that means, adiabatic switched on. And I have no, that means, a collective response of the system, but still I need to go to realistic description. I need this mass renormalization. As well, I need it in any case, if I go to global phase diagram, although the main field type description, like the Hartree-Gutzwiller or dynamical mean field as well, that means there is everything is done at this level. I already need some renormalization of this perturbation theory, which is somehow this comes to the thermodynamic properties. This everything can be done at the level of one particle quantities. The other more complicated is when I expect strong dynamical fluctuation. Actually, this is the region for which the dynamical mean field theory was meant. And I try to really to come to non-Fermi liquid behavior, but this mass renormalization, the adiabatic switching of the of interaction does not help, or this is not sufficient. I have to go beyond. And of course, this Mott-Hubbard metal insulator transition, we heard much about it in this workshop. But it still is something at the edge of between one particle and two particle, because here, at this critical behavior, I obtain have some imprint of two particle function, but still I can express everything within one particle, because this non-Fermi liquid and Fermi liquid behavior is decided on the one particle level, on the one particle quantity. When I really need two particle quantities are simply when I come to collective critical phenomena like quantum phase transition, which is a typical example, in particular in low dimension. Then, of course, I have to look at this thermodynamic, that means to phase transition, the critical properties or critical function or the divergent function, which are mostly two particle, and I really have an access to two particle quantities, and I have to renormalize them to really to make the physical, especially in particle in low dimensions, where the integrability of this divergence is demanded. There's, of course, connected in quantum phase transitions, connected with formation and condensation of bound or resonant pair states. So, okay, but I cannot do the renormalization arbitrarily. I have some demands and restrictions which I cannot break when I construct renormalized theories. First, the best or the most, the principal advantage is thermal, or the demand is the thermodynamic consistence, which was somehow first formulated by Behm and Kadanov. And the best way to reach that is to construct a generating thermodynamic potential from which I derive all thermodynamic quantities. With this function or with this potential, I somehow simulate the exact behavior of this function. Of course, there should be absent, or this theory should be free of unphysical behavior and spurious poles. There must be macroscopic conservation, or should be obeyed, should be fulfilled, unless I have some really broken some symmetry which leads to some breakdown of global macroscopic conservation laws. Then, of course, causality is something which is connected with the quantum structure of the system must be also accomplished. That means I must only have the allowable, so only causal theories which have the proper analytic properties of the Green function. That means all the poles, physical poles, and cuts lie along the real axis. That means I have no, that means all these energies are conserved. Of course, now double counting is one of the most important demands, and of course the theory should be somehow controllable. That I either have some exact limit like this dynamical mean field, which should be exact in D infinity, or I have some small perimeter with which I can control what is missing in my approximate approach. Okay, but we start first, of course, with the model. As I mentioned, that means to simplify everything, to go rather far into this analytic structure of the solution. I simply take into account only the one-band Hubbard Hamiltonian, as everybody knows. However, everything can be reformulated for the multi-band Hubbard Hamiltonian. It's often used to this extension of dynamic of this LDA calculation plus U and plus plus and so on. That means it can be done. However, I bring with this a lot of new parameters which should be determined from the LMTO calculation, which at the present moment are not very important. What is important for me is simply the two aspects of these two parts in the Hamiltonian. This is the kinetic energy which is involved here, and the interaction with the charge. Actually, I have this hopping amplitude which comes the input parameter, interaction U, which is the screened Coulomb repulsion, and then the chemical potential which determines the number of particles. That means the situation in which I do this calculation for the model. That means I have these two, that means physical quantities as the mass, as the hopping amplitude, and the charge which is contained in the Coulomb interaction. I will speak about it, or I come back to it during this development of perturbative approaches to this. What I need, that means what I want to calculate are thermodynamics of the system. That means the basic quantity is grand potential, because I'm in the quantum system, the grand canonical ensemble, or the grand ensemble is the appropriate one. So I try to construct a functional, or the function which is a function of Hopping, U, temperature T, and chemical potential mu. And I have this potential which gives me the equilibrium properties of the system of the thermodynamics. However, of course, it does not generate everything in this problem, because, of course, I would like to calculate susceptibilities, specific heat, and other quantities which cannot be derived directly from this. But must be, that means edit, or must be this system, the equilibrium system must be perturbed via external sources. That means I take this as the equilibrium state, I perturb the system with some external sources, and since I have a quantum system, I can allow, that means, the sources which are not, that means, so to say, conserving. If I want to, that means the external sources serve two purposes. First, I can generate the physical quantity like susceptibility, specific heat, and so other, or also the first, or the density of states, and so on. Then, however, I can also use it to study the stability of the solution. That means, you know, that if I reach some solution, I always have to decide whether the solution is a real minimum, or at least local minimum, or it is a saddle point. And of course, I can use this external perturbation to really to check the stability of the solution of the equilibrium state I achieved. So what I do, I simply add to Hamilton, this Hubbard-Hamiltonian external term, which couples external fields to pairs of creation and annihilation operator in various combinations. And to be able to describe all possible fluctuation I can have in the system, I can introduce these four fields, which one, I just name them, and then I show how they act in the Hamiltonian, which is something which conserves both, because I have two principal quantities, charge and spin, in the system. And in the external potential, that means this is potential which conserves charge of the spin and the spin of the equilibrium system. Then I can add a field which adds spin and charge to the equilibrium system. I have one field which adds only spin but preserves charge, and the other one vice versa, is that it adds charge but preserves spins. And this field, these three fields, are complex fields. That means I need the complex conjugate to really to come back to the conservation law. But in quantum systems, of course, they are allowed, because I can generate the system like the quantum system like superconductivity. Now this is the complete form of this external potential. Here is this simply field, which is this eta parallel, which then will be explained as the field that generates longitudinal susceptibility. You see that it simply is bound to density. Xi parallel is simply bounded. You see how I have these two annihilation operators and the same spin. That means I subtract two charges and two spins from the system. That is there's a conjugate field. The full field is adding two charges and two spins. Eta is I create one spin up and annihilate spin down, but conserve charge. And the eta is just vice versa. I simply conserve spin, but add two charges. So that means one pair of electrons, which is needed for superconductivity. That means there are all possible fields I can have. How can I combine the external field with a pairs of creation and annihilation operators? This all arbitrary combinations. So as I mentioned, that I can use these fields to generate, or I add this to the Hamiltonian, I try to recalculate the free energy of the grand potential and use the functional derivatives with respect to these external generators to define one particle and two particle quantities. And in principle, it was important I can create the so-called generalized susceptibilities, which are these second derivatives with respect to one field and the complex conjugate. That means the complex conjugate derivative is needed if I put that at the end in the calculation, I put this external field to zero. Then, of course, everything should the conservation laws must be fulfilled. That means once I introduce one complex field, the other derivative should be with the complex conjugate. That means the first derivative of one complex field should vanish in equilibrium. However, the second derivative is I can conserve this alpha and alpha bar. That means this one field and the complex conjugate field, I obtain something which is real. I can look at it, and this define me generalized susceptibility, which in principle must be positive, or at least the lowest angle value should be zero. And it defines the local stability of this thermodynamic phase. The alpha, then I come back to it, is a channel index, which you see that means I have several possibilities how I can construct the two in the second derivative of the full potential. And of course, if this left-hand side diverges, this susceptibility diverges, I obtain this long-range order, and this order parameter then is coupled to this generating field via Legendre transformation in this Hamiltonian, or this thermodynamic potential. Okay, now having this Hamiltonian, this external perturbation, I can come and I can ask, how can I really come to this grand potential? That means as I mentioned, I will deal with perturbations here. This is the most direct way to do that. And of course, there are several possibilities how to do. The first, the naive way, would be simply take into do not do anything. That means you do anything. That means you simply take this expansion in U, and what you obtain is something. You look at this thermodynamic potential, and you obtain something which is functional of G0, G0, which is the bare propagator and the bare charge, bare mass and bare charge. And this type of summing is somehow in some sense naive, but there are situations where we have many cancellation of diagrams. That means you are not allowed to do some so biased type of summation of diagrams like the single impurity Anderson model, which is somehow preferred to really to sum termodynamic the perturbations here without picking up some classes of subdiagrams into infinite order. But this type of summation of diagrams is suitable only then if we have no critical phenomena, no transition. That means everything should be smooth and adiabatic from weak coupling to strong coupling. But we are not lucky with this very in many situations, so we have to go to a better type of approximation. That means we have to introduce renormalization. That means when we expect some critical behavior, we need really infinite classes of infinite diagrams to be summed. We have to go to renormalized perturbation theory. And the easiest way is simply, again, I replace the effective, the bare mass of the bare propagator with the effective mass of the full propagator G. And of course, with that, if I somehow, that means add or put some kind of diagrams of from this G node into the full G, I have to reduce the number of diagrams to be taken into account. That means these diagrams where only full G appears are these diagrams where no self-energy insertions are there. That means I cannot cut one subdiagram into one electron lines and to decouple or to disconnect this diagram. I can do this also in the naive way. I simply look at this function instead omega. I define this for Luttinger functional. And I try to find out directly this diagrammatic form of this phi. However, the problem is that I have this symmetry factor of this internal vertices. That means I have always this factor 1 over n when I have n vertices, and it is this factor which brings me the logarithm to the generated function. That means it's better ways to do it using the link cluster theorem and to come to self-energy directly, which is defined via this link cluster theorem or the differential form of this. It's a derivative with respect to g of phi must be sigma. And I try to first, that means to look the perturbative expansion for the sigma and put it into this equation and obtain this phi. That's a better way because in sigma, this factors 1 over n vanish and I have this one electron symmetry or this one particle symmetry which allows me to sum geometric series, that means this advantage for me to do the perturbation theory. In contrary to this first approach that I mentioned, this first thing should be added because this full G contains a class of diagrams or in this sigma, that means. I have to add one equation on motion, and this is a Dyson equation, which connects me to the full G, because in this phi, the G is arbitrary analytic function. Only if I put this Dyson equation connecting with G naught, which is the input of this expansion, I connect sigma and G and sigma and G naught to the full G, and I close the equation, and I have the closed approximation for this function. Okay. Now, how can we formalize it? That means the first who really propose how to do it consistently, that means the renormalization without, that means quite generally at any approximation, what should we, as I mentioned, how should I fulfill the demands I mentioned at the beginning of the talk? And I would like to have an expansion of the perturbation expansion only in renormalized quantities. That means I would like to kick off this G node from the function omega. That means only to keep it as a boundary condition as a part of this Dyson equation, which relates me full G with this G naught. It can be done in the following way. That means this formula, which of course was not done by Behm and Kadanov, but it can be formalized in some sense that independent of approximation, I can do the following. I simply first define this thermodynamic potential, which is simply, as I mentioned, the function of G naught to minus 1 is the kinetic energy, in principle, with this proper causality. I wrote it in the functional integral, but you can use any approximation you wish. What I now do is I know that I have the Dyson equation, which I have to fulfill. I replace the G node with these renormalized quantities in this representation. However, G And sigma are unknown function which should be determined. That means they are variational parameters like magnetization in the easing model. And I have to extend the functional from the omega go to functional psi, which should be a function of g and sigma. And they are this analytic function to be determined from saddle point equations. And I define the following equation, the first equation, because I know that this derivative of this omega, beta omega over g naught to minus 1 gives me minus one particle propagator. That means the first derivative defines me Schwinger, defines me Dyson equation, and the other equation with respect to g defines me the definition of g as an average value of the this annihilation and creation apparatus defining the green function. These are two equations which I have to fulfill. I can solve them very easily, and I obtain the general, that means a new representation for this functional psi, which in the beginning is arbitrary function, function of arbitrary function g and sigma, and defined as this physical one, this physical part containing all the physical contribution. And you see that in omega only these renormalized quantities appear. I have the rest which somehow add this the lead to the solution of this equation, and I have the full functional. And if I fulfill the variational condition for this, that means this variation of psi to g is not is zero and psi to sigma is zero, I obtain this Dyson equation as the definition of g. And in this saddle point, this function g, which were the variational parameters arbitrary, now acquire the physical values I need. That means the functional psi now. That means if I have these physical values of g and sigma, this functional psi reduces to the functional omega defining the physical thermodynamic properties of the system. Okay, this is very general, but it's not suitable for approximation because I did not change, or I haven't changed anything in the approach. I simply always use this full omega where I replace the g node with g to minus 1 and sigma. What I get, actually, the Bayman cutoff headed model simply to reduce the number of diagrams I have to sum to reach the thermodynamic. And it's called this phi derivability. Instead of this using this full potential psi, I try to get rid of the sigma, which should be the output of this my calculation. That means this function is a function of g and sigma, something like Hamiltonian, which is function on q and p. And I can go to Lagrangian from this Hamiltonian. And I use the Legendre transformation to get rid of the sigma. And then, of course, obtain this formal representation of the functional phi, which would be the Luttinger-Ward functional, which is only a function of g and the bare charge u. Of course, it is, again, the representation. This is only the formal representation. How can I get rid of the psi of this, of the full representation? However, the phi derivability means something different. That means not a formal representation of this function, as I started with, but it's something different. I try to find diagrammatic representation for this function of phi. As I mentioned, if I use the full renormalized g, I'm not allowed to enter any self-energy insertions. I mentioned the one particle, the irreducible parts into this diagram. That means the phi derivability means that I have this explicit representation of this function of phi, not this formal representation via this full solution of this model. That means I am able to resolve Link cluster theorem with respect to phi. That means I have this sigma is given in the approximation. I resolve this phi as a function of g, and I have this phi derivable approximation. And this is actually what Bayman Cutoff had in mind. However, the solution for this function of phi is very approximation dependent. That means, in contrary to the very formal formulation with this functional psi, that means it depends on what approximation I take. And of course, it's also known that not all approximations are phi derivable. And this all these approximations will start from atomic solution or also dynamical mean field solutions, are not phi derivable approximations, simply because you cannot get rid explicitly of this function sigma, which still appears in the representation for these quantities. That means what has shown, or what has been actually, that means proven with this time, that only these weak coupling theories starting from Fermi liquid are those which are phi derivable approximation, not this which like this atomic solution or the extension of atomic solution do not fall into the category of phi derivable approximation. Okay. And however, I would like to use this for this this formal theory to that means to show how this is the one of the convenient points of this very formal theory is that you can get a very quick derivation of the dynamical mean phi. Sorry, once you know the formal expression I wrote for this full generic generated function of psi, I now use this asymptotic analysis of this one particle function. I know this one particle propagator's diagonal part is independent of dimensionality, as the off-diagonal part fall down as a square root of t, and the self-energy is the other parameter. There is also the local part is independent of dimensionality, and the off-diagonal fall down as 1/3 of d. That means, in the asymptotic limit of infinite dimension, we're using these asymptotics, I split or I get rid of these off-diagonal parts in this perturbation theory. I obtain immediately the exact representation of the generative function for the dynamical mean field theory. Here I have this local functional, that means everything is local because only diagonal functions appear as a function of frequencies, and there are these non-local or these parts which contribute to the compensation to the equation of which should be fulfilled. That means the variational principle. Okay, that means this formal approach, which is free of approximation, was already good to derive the exact representation. However, you see there is no simplification in this omega. It still is a full function, you know. That means to really find some impurity solver to resolve this dependence of omega on this g to minus naught and minus one and sigma. That is what has to be done. That means there is no simplification in this formal approach, but it can be really nicely written very quickly, this solution for the generative function of the dynamical mean field theory. Of course, the application you everybody know, that means in principle I take this solution, that means it was the anchor point, was the infinity. I know that everything depends only on the density of states. I take the density of states which is appropriate for my problem I have to solve, and I apply this equation, what I derive for the infinity in three dimensions, and obtain the mean field picture. Of course, all non-local quantities are irrelevant, at least at the level of thermodynamic potential. However, we know that mean field solution is this being exactly in the infinity is theory which overemphasizes a tendency towards long-range order. And having long-range order, I must have, that means non-local quantities. The non-local quantities are exactly the two-particle quantities. Because there is no, actually, in this formal solution of the dynamical mean field, there is no way, although it is no definition how I handle this two-particle function is non-locally, this non-local contribution to the two-particle function. And that was the problem I was dealt a few years ago, and it was starting my interest in the two-particle function, which some sense goes beyond this dynamical mean field picture. Okay, the correlation functions are very important to determine, as I mentioned in the beginning, the stability of any solution. That means also the dynamical mean field solution. We have generally non-local quantities because a local long-range order exists. That means this is what is called the cavity field or loop field. That means I know that the off-diagonal parts of the one particle propagator falls down as 1/√(t), and one bubble of this one particle propagator goes as 1/d. However, I have d nearest neighbors. That means I can compensate the loss of the weight with the number of nearest neighbors, and I obtain something which is finite. That means back to this irreducible vertex function, which again become local as this local irreducible function in the one particle level. However, contrary to the one particle case, these two particle irreducible functions are not uniquely defined. And that leads to me that I have various leading order corrections to the dynamical mean field if I go to at the two particle level. It depends on the two particle channel, I will tell you in a few moments. Okay, see, in some sense, the dynamical mean field, the formulation, general formulation, there is no explicit connection to two-particle function. Everything was formulated only via this one-particle propagator and the Baryu, as was that means mentioned by Baim and Kadanov. However, I could try to somehow improve upon that, because as I mentioned, this modern approach to perturbation theory is to pick up one quantity and to say I will approximate this quantity and put this quantity into equations of motion and calculate the rest from this equation of motion independently of that. What about to start with two particle? At the two particle level, it would be some kind of advanced level of the perturbation theory. And I would like to, let me say, I would approximate diagrammatically one of these two particle quantities and put it into equations of motion and get all these other quantities. However, as I mentioned, the two particle quantities, even in the dynamical mean field level, the infinity level, are non-local. That means I have to go to the irreducible part, which is the simplest, or the simpler part, is this full two-particle vertex. I will try to define, that means, okay, I would like to define this two-particle irreducible vertex diagrammatically, and the rest would calculate from the equation of motion. And as I mentioned, the two-particle irreducibility is not that easy as the one-particle irreducibility, because we have more complicated symmetry of the two-particle function. I always have one incoming particle and an outgoing particle, or that means a particle on whole. And the irreducibility can be defined in various ways. The best way is to define it diagrammatically. That means I always plot the diagrams is horizontally. I plot the propagation of electron from left to right, hole from right to left, and the vertical lines, these wavy lines, are interaction. Electron hole ladders, the simple days you have the parallel propagation of electron and hole. You can see as a time, for instance, this is a space-time representation. And of course, this should be the two-part electron hole scattering, which means that it's a two-part electron hole reducible. If I cut this electron hole, this pair of electron hole propagators, I disconnect the diagram. I can have electron-electron ladders that simply propagate two electrons on the and scatter on this on the potential. That means when I cut these two, but these are different quantities, I have two electron lines, I disconnect the diagram. And the third possibility, I simply have polarization bubbles, which renormalize interactions. Simply, there are these triplet bubbles, which renormalize interactions. The Hubbard model, I have always the couples because it spin, so to say, spin up, spin down, spin up, spin down. Okay, that means I cut here this one, the polarization bubble, I obtain another, that means a kind of irreducibility of this system. However, it's not the only way how to define this irreducibility, because as I mentioned, in the thermodynamic consistent theory, everything should be derived or could be derived from the generating function of these external sources. Now I can use this external source I introduced to define this two-particle irreducibility, this alpha, these generalized susceptibilities. If I use this eta parallel, that means the second derivative is this respect to this field defines me this reducible function, the interaction channel, or this electron, this polarization bubbles. And of course, this susceptibility lead to longitudinal susceptibilities, either charge or spin. If I use this eta perpendicular, I can derive the electron hole scattering channel, that means the electron hole irreducible channels, these ladders, and it leads to transverse susceptibilities, again, either charge or spin. Or I can use the psi perpendicular, and this will derive in the second derivative electron-electron channel. That means I obtain something like this superconducting susceptibility, which can be derived as somehow important for this electron-electron scattering. And both these two fields are complex, as I mentioned. That means the corresponding, that means long-range order, which is large under conjugate to this field, must be anomalous. That means I have anomalous function either in this field or this type, or this type of long-range order. That means this type corresponds to superconductivity. You know, there are anomalous function, and this transverse order also is somehow connected with susceptibility. If I make simply electron hole symmetry transformation in one of these particles, I obtain electron-electron from electron hole. Or there is a third way of definition of this two-particle irreducibility can be also seen. If I look as a general structure of the two-particle function, I have, that means, the four points, end points of the two-particle function. However, because of the global conservation of momentum, there are the four momenta, that means momentum and frequency. I have four momenta, that means I have four points and three momenta only, because one, the complete momentum, the total momentum must be conserved. And to describe it, I can either use, that means one of these four, I have three independent momenta, that at least one must be fermionic and one must be bosonic. And can I choose either two fermionic and one bosonic, and one fermionic and two bosonic. I use these two bosonic variables because they are important for the further development of the theory. This first momentum is a transfer momentum in the horizontal, on the horizontal direction. You see the electron comes with k and comes out with k plus q. This is four momentum which it got from this interaction. The q prime is a vertical, that means the change, the difference between the incoming particle and incoming hole. However, I also have a third independent two-particle momentum, the bosonic momentum, is simply a complete, is a total sum of the moment of the incoming momentum. I sum these two incoming momenta, okay, the third momentum, which simply defines the third channel. That means these three bosonic momenta, Q, Q prime, and the sum of these two define the three channels I have at disposal at two-particle level. Okay, this, as I mentioned, these two-particle levels or two-particle channels are defined always with sort of with active and inactive variables or conserved variables. Here on the left-hand side are the K and K prime of fermionic variables. That is, this they are something like matrix elements of this of the active form. X, Y are two-particle functions, or this kind of lambda or gamma or these vertices, and GG are the, simply the pair of one particle properties interconnecting with this two particle quantities in this appropriate channel. And you see each channel is defined in different combination of these two particle quantities. For instance, in this electron hole channel, I mentioned this vertical channel in X and Y is constant in any scattering event, that does not depend on the intermediate momentum Q double prime. In the electron-electron channel, I see that if I take twice this momentum plus this two, that means that this total momentum, total incoming and outgoing momentum is also independent of Q prime. And it's is the same in X and Y during the whole processing. That means here it is the vertical momentum which is conserved, which is independent as a parameter, as a non-active variable. Here it is the total incoming momentum which comes into this scattering. And in the U channel, the vertical channel is simply the horizontal transfer momentum, which remains conserved. And the other two variables are simply these active variables, which I should, actually you see there's a matrix multiplication, the KK prime is the K space, the fermionic space, I should diagonalize it to obtain really then the solution to the appropriate equations, or to these better Salpeter equations. Okay, now I can come to this two-particle normalization finally. That means my intention was to use the two-particle function. I now solve the formal problems with definition of this two-particle irreducibility, and I can go to this to pick up some of them and say, okay, I take one of these, or the lambda alpha, and approximate them diagrammatically, and the rest I will define from the equation of motions. That means there will be use the exact relation. Of course, that means if I choose another renormalization, not sigma but lambda, I must add new equation of motion I have to fulfill, and the equation of motion does the following. Once I know this lambda alpha from the diagrammatic theory, I use this Bethe-Salpeter equation in this appropriate channel. That means what I wrote, this special multiplication in each channel, this generic form of this multiplication written, there is this lambda alpha in the alpha channel, and now is the Bethe-Salpeter equation formally written. Note that simply this gamma on the left-hand side is independent of alpha. That means the two-particle vectors must not depend on the decoupling, what is irreducible, what is reducible, which kind of Bethe-Salpeter equation I use. That is independent of alpha. This only is decoupling. That means this some form of definition, what is reducible and irreducible, it is my own decision. The full solution, the full vertex must not depend on this, on my decision, what is irreducible, what is reducible. These are the Bethe-Salpeter equation. That means from lambda, I use this equation to calculate gamma, and then I use the Schwinger-Dyson equation. This is actually the Schrödinger equation for green function, and it relates me this sigma function, or the function sigma, this Hartree term, plus the contribution for the two-particle vertex. This is also exact equation. That means if I know lambda, I use this Bethe-Salpeter equation, then I use Schwinger-Dyson equation, I obtain sigma, and I come back from sigma, I use this link cluster theorem to obtain phi. That means I can obtain all the theory from starting from this lambda alpha going up to the generating function. But of course, that is more and more complicated. That means the lower the level of the approximation of the derivative, the higher derivative I use for the approximation, the second derivative of the generating function, the more equation I have to use to recover the full theory. That's why also the two-particle techniques are very complicated. Of course, I can use this very simple, this non-self-consistent two-particle normalization is called this fluctuation exchange, most of you know. And simply, I pick up the simplest possible approximation for these three independent channels. This, I take the ring diagram, that means I pick up only a singlet channel in this U, the interaction channel, that means the bubble channel, I put it as a U. And I obtain simply the Bethe-Salpeter equation is diagonal, simply is algebraic form. I can sum it because the only term now is the the two-particle bubble, electron hole bubble, which comes into that, and everything is somehow algebraic. I can do everything, fulfill this explicitly. The beta subpedal equation, put it into the Schwinger-Dyson equation, obtain sigma. This is really this part of the flex approximation for the self-energy sigma. Or I can do the same for the ladder diagram. That means I either choose this electron hole or electron-electron. The other, of course, are zero, because I neglect them. I obtain the RPA approximation, T-matrix approximation, and this is the difference between T-matrix, electron-electron channel, and electron hole is only that I now use this electron-electron bubble, not electron-hole bubble. That means the K double prime's integration variable comes with minus sign into this bubble in this compared to this electron hole, because it's a conservation of momentum. But it's rather simple. In principle, there is no renormalization at the two-particle level, because what I did, my intention was that renormalization means I replace the bare U with some renormalized quantity. What I did, I simply took this renormalized quantity and put this the simplest value. This is non-renormalized quantity. It means there is no really no two-particle renormalization at this level. Okay, that means let's try to do it better. And this what is done better is this with the Parquet approach. And simply, one reason why I do not like this non-self-consistent approach is simply I pick up one channel, and take care of the one of contribution to one channel and neglect the other ones. I know from the symmetry at least that always two channels are equivalent. If I have this electron hole scattering, the U channel is, that means if I have singularity as electron hole channel in the RPA channel or the ladder channel, I have the same singularity in the bubble channel, at least in paramagnetic phase. That means, okay, this is not a good choice because I neglect always the class of diagrams which are of the same order in the divergence as the whatever I chosen. That means it's better is to do, and to of course to avoid this multiple definition of the irreducibility, to come to the completely irreducible two-particle channel. That means it's a function which is it is more restriction on it given. That means it should be irreducible in all three channels I have in the two-particle level. It is called the completely two-particle irreducible function. That means this function contains the bare interaction plus all interaction which at least contain at least three and higher or three particle and higher order contribution. That means I can cut or I can disconnect this diagram I only by cutting at least three fermionic lines. That means it's really something which goes beyond the two-particle level. It's uniquely defined. That means I can use it. And I will try. Okay, say. Let me study so that I will try to approximate this function I via diagrams. For instance, I take U, which would lead to Parquet equations, and the rest I will define everything from the equation of motion. Of course, I have to add to a new equation of motion to couple this two function I with the irreducible function lambda alpha, which I used in the previous slides. That means if I have this I use this what is called topological non-equivalence of different 2p channels. That means non-equivalence means if I take one bubble within this channel, that means this either electron hole or electron-electron or this quarkization bubble, the results must be different. And that means mathematically I obtain different results if I go...
I in the Parquet approach, isn't it expressed in terms of the full vertex function, not the irreducible ones?
This one, you mean?
No. You just say Parquet approach, I determine diagrammatically.
Okay, the I is defined diagrammatically. It depends what you take as a diagram. That means you take the lowest contribution to I is U. It's simply the bare interaction. If you go beyond U, you have the specific diagrams you have to define, and you can either use this full randomized perturbation. So that means you replace U everywhere, any position you replace with lambdas. We must replace these lambdas, irreducible function.
Irreducible ones, no?
Irreducible ones, okay.
I thought it...
Because always from lambda you obtain the full gamma, you obtain with the Bethe-Salpeter equations.
Somehow I remember that I is determined in terms of the full vertex function when you do this.
Okay, it depends how that means what kind of diagrams you take. You can write it either with in form of gamma or lambda, but lambda is more, that means what would you say, lambda is more basic representation. Of course, you still can represent gamma as a function of lambda. You know the Bethe-Salpeter equation. Okay, it depends how you write it. That means which diagrams you take into account, but it's only a matter of definition. You can write it directly with gamma, say, okay, this is a solution of this Bethe-Salpeter equation with lambdas.
And which alpha would it choose? How would it choose the specific channel?
It depends on the symmetry of the diagram. That means you must okay to that means you are not allowed to have the double counting of diagrams. Because that means, of course, you have to if you repeat the diagrams, you can reproduce. That means the two particle reducible diagram, which should be somehow avoided. It's always this. If you take into account this irreducible part, you should always. That means the new diagrams should be free of this. That means the irreducible insertions in the diagrams. That is important. But okay, in principle, nobody at present or up to now dare to go beyond the simplest parquet. It means the simplest parquet is I is simply U. It's complicated enough. That means to do it at this level, not to go to beyond this beyond this level. Okay, but the equation I obtain is the following. That means non-equivalence mean I write the full G, full gamma. I write full gamma as the irreducible part in the channel alpha plus the reducible part. The non-equivalence mean that the reducible in channel alpha are irreducible in the channel the other channels which are not this not the Q alpha. That means that lambda alpha in the channel alpha, electron hole for instance, is a full irreducible, the completely irreducible part, plus the reducible in this other channels. That means that would be the interaction channels electron-electron channel. And then of course, I have this. These are actually the parquet equation, and this parquet equation that means close for the lambdas. If I try to exclude this gamma, sort of this K, the irreducible part, via this Bethe-Salpeter equation, that means I can represent this K as a functionals of lambdas again. And of course, if I do that, I exclude this gamma from this equation, and this parquet equation then defines a set of equation. The self-consistent equation for lambda as a function of I and one particle propagator G. This is everything what I have to do. That means I really have this new representation. Okay, I wrote it with lambda, okay, you can be it gamma, but I think that the primary functions are lambda. And really what I achieved with that is a genuine charge generalization. That means in each diagram when I have except for this bare part of the bare interaction with the input for this, I replace U with a full lambda, and of course the charge, the bare charge replaces with a two-particle irreducible function, and the G node I replace with G. That means a full randomization of charge and the spin simultaneously. This function is very complicated to find, of course, because we have to resolve this equation that I showed that it are not very easy to do. Okay, this is actually the heart of the parquet approach. That means really to concentrate or to take this I as the simplest or the perturbative approach to I, which is normally in what is called parquet equation is simply taken as U, and the rest is defined via this equation of motions. Now to summarize, what does it mean? How I proceed if I have this parquet approach? That means
I'm not familiar with this. What they call the parquet approximation is when you replace the I by U, just by the barrier.
And then
you have all these ladders and bounded chains.
And of course, it will depend how much that means you are able to deal with this Bethe-Salpeter equation on three channels.
That means. Complicated integral equations. Can you just comment? And sorry again for my ignorance. If you just apply it to the Ising model in the Pfeiffer theory near the critical point, what would come out of this parquet?
They will come up with this similar equation, but the difference between the Hubbard model and the Ising model is that in Ising model, the two particle function do not approach singularity. That means they simply, so to say, the effective mass would be smaller than not bigger. That means it's not equal. There is no singularity in the Bethe-Salpeter equation. Okay, you can do that, but it's a mere randomization of mass which goes to zero. It's a massless mass which goes anyway to zero. However, you have this other problem when the effective mass diverges. You really have a singularity in the Bethe-Salpeter equation. Then you need it. If the mass increases, not decreases. Okay. I tried it with the Ising model, but there was no really principal change of this standard approach to the Ising model. Okay. Let me how to proceed. That means with this parquet approach. What does it mean? First, this mass normalization is contained in this. In this Dyson equation relating G naught with this G, this is the one particle level. Then I have this two particle level. I have this Bethe-Salpeter equation. From lambda, I construct this full G, this two particle vector, which is not unique, and I have these three types of equation for this. I add this parquet equation. That means I put this I into this, construct this lambdas as a function of gamma and lambda. For gamma, I use this equation in this appropriate channel. And then when I resolve this equation for this lambda for I and lambda self-consistently, and a G is one particle propagator. G, I add the Schwinger-Dyson equation, one, and when I know this gamma, I know lambda, I know this gamma, I put it in the Schwinger-Dyson equation, obtain sigma, and close the equation. That means completely, it means that I have a set of, a non-trivial set of integral, non-linear integral equation at this parquet level, plus this, let me also, this is the linear integral equation defining the sigma as a function of G. That means in principle everything is exact, it depends, all these approximations are done only at this level of the function I, which is simply the bare U, plus some corrections to that, which are the three particle and higher order contributions to this function. Okay. Now only to show you how the parquet diagrams, that means they are not the parquet diagrams actually, they are only the beta subbeta equations for these two particle functions, which are simply the full G this electron hole ladder. That means it's simply, it's rather simple. It's also, you see that this is a linear integral equation for this lambda. It's also a linear equation. That's also somehow what is normally known. But you must assume, or you must take into account that I have these various spins here, sigma, sigma prime. I have a single channel and triplet channel, which I have to solve them. Of course, in this lambda depend on whether I have a singlet or the triplet channel. However, if I put this U interaction, much more complicated. This is a standard channel which you normally use. For instance, Gene Bickers use also as well. That means this one channel where I have only really this bubbles contribution here. However, in this interaction channel, I have to add something which is a renormalization of the lower line and renormalization of the upper line, which also are two particle functions, the two particle reducible function can be defined. However, you see that here is the vertex cannot be quite seen because the resolution is not good. But it's electron hole channel, not U channel. That means this cross diagram in the interaction channel somehow couple this electron hole channel, this the ladder channel with this U channel, with this vertical channel or this bubble chain channel. That means nobody has ever now to try to solve this with the full equation. It means really is the nonlinearity even increased with this equation.
Is it correct to say that if we assume that all these vertex functions are finite numbers, these equations just give you integral equations with these numbers, and then what comes out is just family good, right?
Yeah.
So this is a principal way to somehow quantitatively calculate from liquid parameters in a self-consistent fashion, right?
Yeah, okay, it depends, of course.
Ainsworth, right. 20 years ago.
Okay, now, but it depends on how do you do it. If you go to that means if you start from the weak coupling, you obtain Fermi liquid, it's sure. However, if you go to the critical point, if you have to introduce the order parameter, which of course change the symmetry of this equation. Yeah. And you can go
the different. The question was, if you go to the critical point where these Allende amplitudes can start becoming singular, then what's the level of treatment of the critical fluctuations of this? Is this like a spherical model?
No. It's hard to say because in this approach, the critical properties, the universal properties in the size are coupled with non-universal one-particle quantities due to the Schwinger-Dyson equation. If you cannot decouple this really at this level of the two-parquet equation, that means to pick up only the two-particle quantities, I forget the one-particle ones.
But my impression is that this is just like doing Finkelstein's theory, the very the same construction.
No. This Finkelstein's theory is only that the Castor and the other, they only take care only of two particle functions, never one particle functions. If you really want to have a consistency between one particle and two particle functions, that means you have to take integrals of the singular properties, the singular functions, and put them into this. The Dyson-Schwinger equation, we obtain the one particle. Yeah,
what they show is that the single particle functions drop out of all singular quantities into D. So you're going to have to include them to get leading blocks.
Yeah, okay, I don't know. That is, I don't know how far that means you can show that the one particle could drop off.
In a case, I mean, if you're interested in logarithmic singularity.
Okay, it is possible that you can have the cases where really the one particle properties drop out. That means, of course, you lose the contact with the Fermi liquid, however. Because the Fermi liquid is defined on one particle spectra. Okay, but it's a complicated stuff because, of course, to try to solve them in the critical region is very difficult, even this non-critical. But I would like to stress that they are not the parquet equation; they are only the beta subbeta equation. It should be used to decouple or to bind the irreducible vertices lambda with the the complete irreducible vertex I. Okay, since we are not able to solve the parquet equation completely, we try to simplify. That means we would like to keep only the qualitative features of the approximation and try to somehow simplify the equation and to look what comes out if I go from weak coupling to intermediate coupling at least. Of course, Gene Beakers is the one who tries to solve this non-cross parquet diagrams, but the numerical completely. The problem is the complete solution is that you have these three independent momenta, and each channel has an independent basis. That means there's three bases to take into account and to switch from one basis to S if you go from one channel to other channel. It is a very demanding numerical problem. It can be solved in very high temperatures, far away from any singularity. But I think that in this region, the parquet are not very interesting. So it's very difficult to solve, and the results you obtain are not much different from the flex approximation. That means it's really not worth doing that. But I think what is worth doing is to look at the parquet in the situation where the flex break down or are not reliable. This is a critical regions of the two particle functions. Okay, that means the critical means that I have something which is singularity, and the singularity may appear only in the bosonic variables. That means I try to keep only the relevant variables as something where this word mentioned. That means I try to only keep this universal quantity. That means what is singularity, I neglect all the variables which are not single, which cannot bring the singularity. Of course, the incoming fermion variables, in principle, in essential irrelevant, because you know there is no condensation of fermions. That means I can forget it in principle. If I do that, and I take only this electron hole channel and the U channel, but this non-cross version of this, I can, in principle, formally exactly solve this equation. That means this is something like, if I completely forget this K, I obtain a convoluted integral equation which can be solved via Fourier transformation. If I take into account the K, that means completely, that means no, do not forget it, and take only these two channels. This is the exact form of the solution of this two particle, this electron hole and U channel, where this bar means a kind of this diagonalization transformation. In the when I neglect this K completely, I obtain this Fourier transformation. That means this bar is a Fourier transformation from Q to four vertex four coordinate or the coordinate X. That means you see this one channel, of course, U is a function of U, there's a Fourier transform. However, this function is diagonal in this channel, just in double Fourier transform. That means you see that is important is that simply you have too many, as I mentioned, that you have to go from one basis to other basis if you switch from one channel to other channel. However, what is important, I have this algebraic structure, which is important for this looking at the pole. These denominators are important and can go to zero. That means develop a pole. That's very important. And that was I actually started with. If I look at this flex approximation, I see that increasing U, this simply these two channels increase the effective mass and in principle can diverge. That means it still is very complicated. So before I would like to decide whether this is really worth doing that. So what I do is now the next steps I simply forget this numerator part, which is rather complicated, this bounds this one channel with the other, and keep only the numerator here, because the numerator is important close to the critical point. And I keep it from the numerator, I keep only this U term here. That means what is a further simplification, and I end up, pardon?
What is X?
X is simply a Fourier transform of the Q in the four space. Or it can be shown eigenvalue of the one channel of the parquet equation. That means it's a Fourier transform. In that case, if I have this K, this incoming K, I forget completely. I have this, the convolutive equation I can solve it via Fourier transform. If it is not a Fourier transform, this is there's a more complicated transformation. This X would be an eigenvalue in this channel. The Q is a conserving Q. I always have the parameterized the scattering of this channel. That means it's in principle is exact form. However, I do not know the exact form. I do not know this bar, this transformation I have to use. Only in this case, when the Q is zero, this is forgotten, I know that this transformation is a Fourier transform. Then I can do it explicitly.
Approximation applicable in famous article, in famous days when you have logarithmic divergence. You have three channels. Garikov, I guess, Richkov, Dzerzhinsky, 40 years ago.
Yeah, it is in principle applicable. However, it is the problem is that of course they use, that means they pick up this variable, which is a logarithmic variable, and then they use it. I think that the abacus of what he did for this single impurity or the Konda model was that he picked up only one part of this for the parquet, Abricoso. What did he? He simply took this quadratic form, which is simply the because it, in the Konda problem, you have two type of divergence. One particle bubble goes to, it diverges when t goes to zero, and this is the divergence which was picked up by Abricoso. However, If I take this RPA channel, that means this denominator was never considered by Abrikosov. That was also the reason why he did not obtain the correct results for the Kondo impurity. However, of course, it is very difficult because in this stage of case, there was no, so to say, reduction of variables. What you mentioned in principle could be possible, but I am not sure whether I am able to really to decouple these variables as was done by Gorkov and the others. That's the problem. In principle, it's been possible, but I don't know whether it's really as viable to do it in this way as they did that. But only what I know is mentioned that what this Abrikosov was not the full parquet what he did. Okay, what I obtain is that finally, if I really take only this u, which is simply I have only, because this x is only constant, this does not depend on x because it was a delta function on x, that means this is only one q for the one q variable. With this in the horizontal transfer moment, we see important, or this variable important for lambda electron hole, and this vertical transfer moment is for lambda u. I can completely decouple the equation. I see this structure, analytic structure of this equation is very similar to flex. If I simply forget these denominators here and here, I reproduce the flex approximation. That means the only difference between this and flex is simply this bubble which is used in flex. Is normal, this normal is this u multiplied with this. That means I replace this u, this bare u, with renormalized this effective interaction gamma, which is the full vertex now. And I put this, I define this bubbles and put them into this equation and can solve this equation. Of course, the Schwinger-Dyson equation also can be solved rather easily, and that's me. This approximation is the complexity of the equation comparable with the flex, that means it can be solved. And what comes out from these equations? Of course, we have a VQ, that means it's very close to flex. There is no difference with flex because there is no much randomization in the interaction U. However, if I go to stronger interaction, because we know there's a flex approximation try to develop this pole. However, if I have this only, because this everything that's dynamical means I have only frequencies as a dynamical variables. That means there's a one-dimensional integration there. If I try to approach the singular pole, this singularity, the singularity in this one-dimensional case is non-integrable. That means I can never reach a singularity because I would break the condition of integrability of any singularity. That means the solution try to avoid this pole. What does it mean? To avoid this pole, there's simply two solutions, because the nonlinear equation from this lambda, if the two real solutions, that means merge and split into complex plane. And what I obtain is a new solution at the two-particle level without a singularity and the two-particle functions. And there's a kind of special symmetry, complex symmetry, which is broken. Normally, this complex function lambda is a function of this of the one variable z as a complex frequency, have this reflection symmetry. If I make this complex conjugate of z, I can compensate this complex conjugate of lambda. This is valid only in this case when all the expansion parameters are real. However, in the complex means there is no complex structure which is brought by the solution of this parquet equation. However, when the two real solutions of this lambda split into complex planes, complex conjugate solution, I of course obtain new complex structure.
Excuse me, what is complex plane? Is this z is the same as omega?
Z is a complex omega, right.
Ah, so z is just omega. So you have solutions for complex frequency.
Yeah. Because the function has a cut along the real axis.
What dynamic technique do you use?
Pardon?
Do you use zero temperature?
Yeah, zero temperature. Because
you work at zero temperature.
Because the Matsu, okay, I can do this equation because if the analytic structure is known, you can continue from the imaginary axis to real axis. This is the advantage of the analytic controllable approximations. Everything that along the real axis. And then you have the cut along the real axis. Okay, then you obtain this new order parameters, which are simply somewhere which is this difference of this double complex conjugation, and of course the physical, but the measure, because it's not measurable, it cannot be also measured because it's a complex, but the physical properties are defined by the regular vertex, which is simply the sum of these two. Of course, what does it mean is that this something is seen to be unphysical because this lambda zero, if I put the omega to zero, is the effective interaction, it should be real or positive, but now this gets complex. That means it's something which seems to break some this basic law of conservation of energy.
So this is applying it to the
equal to this infinity. Yeah, it means only when you have only frequency as a dynamical variable. That means there's no Q.
So this is like solving the Anderson impurity model.
Yes. Something like that, yeah.
But we know that this has a fermi-liquid ground state in the metallic state, right? So So all these things should be convergent. In other words, all the
Okay. It's possible. Okay, it's a question. How, let me how to interpret it. That means it could happen that the parquet do not contain the, let me, the real physics of the intermediate coupling or strong coupling. That is possible. Okay, if you use, if you try to, okay, the only worst is if you try to use this parquet equation, try to increase you, what happens with that? It means the difference between the flex and parquet is that. It means you obtain something which is new, because you cannot reach the singularity, it's true.
And how is this technically treated, the upper cutoff in frequency? How is the technically?
There is no upper cutoff in frequency. You can, because you have finite bandwidths.
But there is no trivial frequency dependence with a scale that can be small.
I don't understand what you mean. That means there you have a cutoff of the bandwidth. You don't
have particle bandwidth in service number cutoff.
Okay, but I think that there is a something which is physically interpretation of that, because the known this apparent of the broken conservation of energy is some field has a physical interpretation. Namely, what I would say is something that is. There's a resonance state appears. The resonance state are these states that you have the almost bound state. You have the state which are bound for a long time, but not for infinite time. What has happened with this effective interaction, that simply this one, the imaginary part of the effective interaction means that you have the absorption of the particles from the asymptotic states to the bound pairs. And the other, that the compass conjugate means you have the emission back, because you don't, they cannot exist in the bound state for infinite time. They go back to the asymptotic states. Okay, this is something, but not as one particle, but the two particles, where I showed this picture. And that is something I think is a quantum mechanical analogy, is that if you go into this tunneling effect, that means you have a kinetic energy is lower than the barrier potential. That means you have to switch from the real frequency, from real momentum to complex momentum. Okay, now I think that in some part is really something which improves of the flex, but okay, but it's really the question whether it's, as you mentioned, that means the simple single impurity model is somehow it corresponds to the, what is known about that. But I think there are other applications which seem that means support that there is something physical on that. If you look at this one, at this solution, I compare the flex solution and this Parquet solution with a symmetry breaking that. What was that means? What is that in one particle level you do not see much difference, because density of state is really a Fermi liquid type. However, what is the difference? You know that the flex approximation to overemphasize the tendency toward the scale of this this middle or this quasi particle band is go as a to e to minus u square multiplied with rho. That means it's over emphasizes the tendency toward this metal insulator transition. That means the parquet. Pardon?
What are the units here?
You need one minus, the bandwidth is one minus one. That means one is half of the bandwidth. One is half bandwidth.
I see.
This is unit.
The bandwidth is two.
Yeah, bandwidth is two.
So okay. This is very closely related to Muller-Hartmann's approximation, except that this is done in a more parquet way. I mean, there are more diagrams, but. You always have fully normalized propagators in the perturbation theory.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, Hartmann did it just for the self-energy, whereas this is done.
Okay, what Muller-Hartmann did was simply the flex approximation, these three channels. But it's simply, in principle, as I mentioned, the analytic structure is very close to the
simpler one, where he just did the self-energy, self-consistently. Then he had letters and bubbles, and that was the next paper. But in the first paper, there was only self-energy calculation with a fully normalized.
So I don't know what you mean, but I know this one with when he calculated the effective mass in these three channels, that means it was the flex approximation.
For you, it would follow, we know that what should be the insulating phase already, right?
Well, this is what Muller-Hartmann also got the similar results.
Okay, in this case, you see, in this approach, you don't see the meta-insulator transition. That is real.
You produce these states, so this is back to Muller-Hartmann 20 years ago, right?
Okay, that means it's something which is different at the two-particle level. The one-particle level is not much different, but the two-particle is really different. It defines a new structure, because you really have to avoid the pole. What was the question?
It was single particle.
They were single. Now this is the real part of the self-energy. That means really this infinite, that means it develops this effective mass, this slope is effective mass. You see the Parquet slow down the effective mass, that means the green is and then you see that really that this, the approach to the critical point is slower than it should be. There is in one particle level, I do not see much difference between this and the flex approximation. However, the two particle level is quite different. And now I see what happens with this, as you ask about the lower and upper Hubbard band. But it seems that there's something, there's some structure develops at the two particle level. That means really I somehow remove the weight from the central peak and move it to the satellite peaks. But it's done as a two particle, this is a regular particle. That means the regular particle vertex. There is this imaginary part which should be zero at Fermi level. That's also a quite different structure from this. You see there's almost divergent and so the flex approximation.
A function of three frequencies, right?
No, it's only one because I have the simplified parquet. It's something like flex. It should be three, but however, in this simplified approach, I have only one frequency there.
And how do you interpret that frequency? I mean, if I want to think about gamma as a function.
It depends on channel. It depends on the channel you choose. That means it's always as mentioned. You have the three. You have the correction to dynamically mean field. This flex is the exact solution. Flex the exact solution for the parquet in the Q space in the infinite dimensions, because all the self-consistent correction fall apart. That means fall apart. That means are not there.
Yeah, but even in dynamical mean field theory, where there is no Q, gamma is a function of three frequencies, right? One, like you explained, corresponding to the different channels, right?
Yeah.
And then you're plotting something which is a function of one frequency. So I would like to understand how to interpret that frequency.
Okay, it
depends.
No, this is. It depends on the channel you choose, because of course the form is, as I mentioned here. Let me come back to.
This question of the form. Gamma is really a function of three frequencies. So do you like set other frequencies to zero, or you integrate over other frequencies?
Right. No, it's something like, look. No. He just said, if I take this lambda electron hole channel, this one, this frequency is simply the transfer momentum in the horizontal, that means horizontal line. This is the only frequency which is relevant. The other are neglected.
Yes. Means
yeah, they are in principle zero. They are not
yes,
there.
They are set to zero.
So I assume.
They're not integrated over.
No.
Okay, they're set to zero.
Because, in flex approximation, of course, you also have the one frequency dependence in the flex.
But it's a bit better just to integrate over instead of setting it to zero.
But you cannot close the equation if you integrate over. You must get rid of this.
You also cannot close the equations if you set equal to zero.
No, I can close this equation. Because it's basically, okay, if you look at this, it's simply I have to know this in the denominators here.
So it must be an integral equation, right?
Okay, no, but in the flex level, that's simply the integral equation reduced to algebraic equations. In one variable. Because in one particle. Also, in the D infinity, like Q dependence in D infinity, you always have the only one function which depends on one of these two particle variables. Yeah. It depends on the channel. It either is electron-electron channel, electron-hole channel, vertical. That is the same. That means you simply have the one variable which is relevant. The others are, so to say, the function independent of. This Q here in the electron-hole is simply the horizontal transfer. In this, the other channel is the vertical transfer. Because you have different Qs, but it's still the one Q over here.
So maybe it's total frequency, which is conserved in the channel, right?
Yeah. No, it's not conserved. It's the active variable in this channel. It depends on the irreducible one. But it's only which acts in the, because it simply is really, as I mentioned, forget this denominator here, you obtain the flex approximation, which simply is simply the structure of the equation is identical with the flex. Okay, that I mean, so I think that something is okay, which resembles, I think that it could be some way to see this upper and lower Hubbard band. However, the first are seen in the two particle level, I think that there's some problem to be solved between the connection of one particle and two particle.
So somehow they do not feed back in the G.
Because, okay, there's a problem I did not mention is that means the problem how to connect the two particle with one particle. There are two ways to do that. One is a Schwinger-Dyson equation, the other word identity. And you cannot fulfill both of them simultaneously. What I did is.
So the previous thing you showed about the density of states was.
Was from the Schwinger-Dyson equation.
And what happens if you use the other one?
It's not that easy because the other one is this functional differential equation, so it's not easy to solve. You cannot use the word identity to define it. Generally, you cannot use the word identity to define sigma from lambda. It's only some check for the lambda as a function of sigma.
Presumably these equations are easier to use close to the atomic limit, right? Where we have a very small energy scale, which is the Hopping compared to you. And then, presumably, you can simplify equations to in more elementary ways. Is this correct?
No. No, I think that this is a problem. Of course, as I mentioned, the Parquet approach applies only beyond the atomic limit. In the atomic limit, you cannot solve this
atomic limit. I'm not saying in the atomic limit, I'm saying close to the atomic limit. That is assuming that U is much larger than the bandwidth.
Of course, but you have two different limits. You have two, as you know, it's a better Anders solution as well. You never reproduce atomic solution with better Anders solution because the only scale is U divided by T, hopping. Because you cannot have never, because the limit U to infinity means either two going to zero or U going to infinity.
I think maybe this equation is simpler in the limit and you can see how much you can get out of it.
No, I think that there's not much help with the atomic limit because it's really must based on the Fermi liquid properties. You start with a finite T, that means bandwidth is finite. Because you cannot go from analytic function, which is a continuous spectrum, to set of delta function. You cannot have you don't have analytic transition between these two.
Certain class of approximations that even for very large U will give you a Fermi liquid solution, be it stable or not, be it correct or not, but you can get the Fermi liquid solution like the Muller-Hartwig approximation at large U. In this case, there are no analytical problems to be known, right? And you can actually solve the equations.
No, but the problem is, of course, if I want to continue, I have to go through the pole, which simply the pole is developed there. But I have to reduce somehow this effect of the pole. If I use a straight approximation, straight approach to the Parquet, I see the pole. I have to avoid this pole. The only with this Parquet, the only solution was to split into the complex plane to see this new structure at the two-particle level. That means you cannot go beyond this pole because you don't know how it behaves, because you know before you reach it. You started because the Parquet in principle is summation of the weak coupling diagrams. That means the phi derivable type of this approximation is not this type of dynamical mean field of atomic solution. You cannot start from large U because you don't know how to behave. If it is new phase, or you don't know how to the Parquet behave in the large U limit. That's a problem. Okay, only to complete because my time is over, to state a conclusion that is where the Parquet or where the flex approximation can be correct. That means the flex is somehow a straightforward approach. That means you have the analytic accessible solution, better Salpeter equation, the algebra, you can solve it rather easily. They are good in higher dimension because the low dimensional systems are this problem with integrability of the singularities. They fail in principle in critical region when you have only singularity in one channel, the other channel is neglected. This Parquet approach at least improved that I can treat the both channels simultaneously. And the non-integrable singularities can exist. That means it's a problem which simply cannot be solved with this flex and must be solved with Parquet. The Parquet, the main problem is, of course, is non-linear integral the structure of the equation, which is a non-linear integral equation which should be solved, and it's not easy to do that. However, we can still have a non-perturbative solution which can go to some bifurcation point at the level 2 particle function, which simply cannot be seen from one particle function because the phase space is too small for that. And then it's simply the way that simply only integrable singularities can appear. That means this is the exact property of the solution, and we know that Parquet is at least the exact qualitative feature is preserved in the Parquet approach. That means if I have higher dimension, the broken symmetry can be at the one particle level because I can have a pole at the two particle function in the better Salpeter equation. In the low dimensional situations, I simply have something like breakdown of the symmetry in the two particle states. Instead of condensation of bound states, I have something like resonant pair states. That means I really have something like there would be some formation local moment if I hope that means if done correctly. Really to conclude only that means this conclusion that to summarize the renormalized perturbation theory simply is this is an approach which you choose some function in this singular approach and then decide to approximate it diagrammatically and the function you put into the equation of motions and to solve the rest with the equation of motion. In that way you obtain some kind of non-perturbative approach to this thermodynamics system. One particle renormalization are important is the Fermi liquid regime when the dominant fermionic excitations. Two particle with the charge renormalization are important with the critical region with singularities in the beta Salpeter equation, especially in low dimensional case. That means or in principle in this self-consistence important to maintain this integrability of singularities. However, what is not yet, that means very completely clarified, is that everything is based, as I mentioned, is extrapolation from weak coupling to intermediate coupling. Unless I solve the problem, what happens at the intermediate coupling, I cannot go to strong coupling, simply. I have to solve it step by step. I cannot start from large U because the atomic limit is not involved in this Parquet. That means That means the strong coupling limit is not yet reliable. That means really it's something which should be to solve, and especially to look at this more carefully as a two-particle solution, what is derived within this simplified parquet. And the others I also mentioned, also Antoine has asked, that means this conflict between Schwinger-Dyson equation, that means the coupling between two-particle function and one-particle function. The parquet uses this Schwinger-Dyson equation. The word is something which should be fulfilled to have the conserving approximation. That means the real two-particle functions are not this function which enters the parquet approach. There is something which I have worked on it in the last day and seems to be some partial solution to that, at least, to be obtained. So thank you for your attention.